There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Absolute fiend, mad dog over here as well, I tell you. We're going to use some of those, the answers to those bits of trivia that we've been giving over the last couple of hours in this final hour of the show. What are you listening to? You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti. Barasti Rooftop Garden is where you can find us. A nice windy evening down here. A nice little breeze blowing through. And if you would like to come on down and experience it, then feel free to do exactly that. I chased, of course. It is a beautiful evening. Get yourself down here and be part of some live football action. In fact, just live sport viewing, because that's what's happening at the moment. We've got to Emirates FA Cup ongoing, fourth round. Early kickoff sees Peterborough take on Leicester. Dale Gordon, a man who spent a bit of time at Peterborough, not shopping, but playing not, a bit of football.
Not for a new passport.
Not for a new passport. Anything else going on down there? What else have they got? What's the score?
Well, we've come up to 15 minutes left now, Tom, and it still remains Peterborough United 1, Leicester City 3. And to be fair to Peterborough, they are having a go. And I think that, hence the reason why we've had a couple of substitutions for Leicester City. Hughes is off, and also Bora as well. And he's brought on Ndidi and Albrighton on 63 minutes. But as the game opens up, there's an awful lot of space now coming, creating in midfield areas, which will obviously play into Leicester City's hands. And they're obviously stretching forward now to try to get that fourth goal. They have a half a chance here with Iheanacho trying to get his hat-trick. But it's, as I said, 15 minutes to go. It's still Leicester City 3, Peterborough United 1. So it looks like they've got their place in the fifth round.
Thanks very much indeed for that one. Thanks also to all those that are getting involved in the conversation. Chris, one stat. When Brady won his first ring, he was a rookie. No rookie has won the bowl. This Nick Foey is a rookie against the only man to do it. He will, says Dev. Dev, thank you very much indeed for that one.
Yeah, Dev listens on a regular basis. There's not many shows that Dev does not tune into. And Nick Foles, I mean, listen, he was class. He really was against the Vikings. Take nothing away. What was it, 38-7? It was an absolute demolition job against the Vikings. But this is a whole different ball game now. You're up against the Patriots. They're bidding for a sixth Super Bowl. That would take them level with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the big thing for me is Rob Gronkowski. You know, if he starts, Patriots should win. They've got so many weapons.
And it's an offense that's hard to contain because they mix and match. Yeah. They don't rely on a wide receiver Brady combination. They don't rely on a certain running back to get the yards on the ground. And he just finds a way to win matches. We know they're going to be extremely well coached and well drilled. And he did it last year. Imagine that comeback. It was comeback victory of the year. They were down 28-0 against the Falcons, and they came back and won that Super Bowl. So they've done it every which way. They're used to winning. The guy's a winner, and Belichick's used to coaching it. But it's a one-off game. Defense tends to win games. Philadelphia do have a good defense. Let's see what happens come Super Bowl next weekend.
Let someone else win it. What time is it? Not now.
3:30
in the morning, Monday morning, UAE, in a week's time.
Are we doing something?
We are. I think we're going to be down. Should I say it? Well, yes, potentially. All will be revealed this week.
Keep it tuned to Dubai Eye 103.8. Equally, find out more on your social media channels. The Dubai Eye Sport one is a good one to get there. Or, of course, Chris McCarty's individuals. In fact, get yourself on there to see the avocado outfit. It's got us chortling throughout the show today. Arch has been a wicket, I understand.
Yeah, and a big wicket as well. Faf du Plessis has been dismissed by the Indian cricket side. Bolt Sharma for 2. There it goes. He's the third wicket to fall today. Amla bowled, caught Pandya, bowled Sharma, 52. AB de Villiers caught Rahane, bowled Bumrah, 6. So South Africa now, this is a fascinatingly poised match. 144 for 4. They're chasing 241 for victory. They need 97 more runs, 6 wickets remaining. Buckle up, is going to be a really good finish to this test match of the Wanderers.
Rugby's just got underway as well. Anglo-Welsh Cup action for you. Sale Sharks taking on Northampton. We'll keep an eye on that one for you. No score in that as yet. There has been a score, though, in the early kickoff over in France, where Toulonnais are taking on Bordeaux Beglers. It's 12-0 to the home team, so Toulon have got the early lead in that one. It's finished 2-2 over in La Liga between Deportivo and Levante. Down under a little earlier on, we saw conclusion of day 2 of the sevens, but we also saw the women's final at the tennis come to a conclusion. Mark,
yeah,
Archer.
and a groundbreaking day for the Danish player Caroline Wozniacki. She beat Simona Halep to win her first Grand Slam title. For many years, she'd probably been the best female player not to win a Grand Slam title, but she's broken through that jinx. She's regained also the world number one ranking. She won the second seed. She won it in three sets, 7-6, 3-6, 6-4 in the final set in very punishing conditions. It was extremely hot. They had to take an enforced weather break so they could all cool down. But Caroline Wozniacki is your 2018 Australian Open Women's Champion.
It's not often, is it, that we talk women's tennis and talk about epic games and epic finals. So it's good to see.
It was an epic final. It really was. A lot on the line. Not only were both women competing for their first Grand Slam title, they're also competing for the world number one. That itself doesn't happen often as well. And huge success. And kudos and credit, all credit to Caroline Wozniacki. We watched her at the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship last year back in February. Incidentally as well, she is a Dubai Duty Free ambassador, so well done to them, I guess, for their continued support with Caroline. And we felt that she was a little bit too defensive. She was a counterpuncher. She's taken, not what we've said, but clearly she felt that herself. She's added a new aggressive streak. She is serving a lot better. Her father, who doubles up as her coach, has done a great job with her game, and she's happy in her personal life as well. And we remarked on it a little earlier. I'm sure the question will come to Rory at some point if he does go on to win tomorrow, because they were former flames, of course, former partners. And if Rory goes on and wins tomorrow, I'm sure one intrepid reporter, probably not me because I'm not that brave, but someone will ask the question, any words on the fact that Caroline Wozniacki has broken her Grand Slam duck?
A question for you, Chris. It could be a groundbreaking day for one of your favourite sportsmen, Roger Federer, embarking on a mission to win a 20th Grand Slam tomorrow. Marin Cilic will be playing the Croatian player. Can he go world number one if he wins Australian Open?
No, I don't think he can. I don't think he's close enough. I think I've not heard it anyway.
He could be far wrong. Away, though,
he's
surely.
He's not far off at all, but he doesn't play enough. He admits that himself. He very much now manages.
He doesn't lose often when he does play, though.
No, he doesn't. You're right. Again, I think, what did he play? 13 tournaments, if memory serves me correct, in 2017. It's all about the Grand Slams now for Roger Federer. He's 36 years of age. It's about managing the body, managing the mind as well, I think, for Roger. I'm a little nervous tomorrow.
No chance.
Federer, you don't give Cilic...
Not a chance.
I'm a little nervous. I think lessons will have been learnt from Wimbledon. There was a meltdown for Cilic, 2017 Wimbledon final. But let us not forget, Tommy, he beat Federer. I think it was the semi-finals of the US Open back in 2014. He went on to beat Kei Nishikori, did the Croat in that final. Lessons will have undoubtedly have been learnt. I truly believe that. Maybe you're right. Maybe Federer comes out tomorrow. He'll play with a freedom. And if he does that, the big thing with Federer, we've been talking about it over the past fortnight, we've been talking about it for many years, in fairness, is that he always gives his opponents different looks. If one tactic isn't working, he's not afraid to mix it up. He'll slice returns. He'll rush the net as well. And he will give Marin Cilic different looks. But
I just think it's been a really weird draw. It's been a really weird tournament. You know, we've sort of got to the men's final and we've got these two guys in the final. But, you know, what have they done to get to the final? The big talking stories have been other games without these two, and they've sort of made their way into the final. Now they're going to be competing for it tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one for Roger, because he hasn't seemed to be really pushed throughout the tournament. I can't recall
He's not dropped a set.
Yeah, he's not dropped a set. So it's all been pretty seamless for him without really... What will be interesting is if Cilic can put some pressure on him and find a way to stress him a bit, because he's had it all his own way, really. And Cilic, well, you know, we all remember what happened at Wimbledon last year.
Yeah, 2017.
When he literally broke down in tears. Yeah. He had an emotional breakdown in the final, and he looked as though he wasn't going to get up and play there for a while. So he's probably learned a few things. He probably feels now he's got nothing to lose against the greatest player of all time. He might just come out guns blazing and give himself a real shot. But it will be fascinating. But, I mean, Federer stands on the brink of history here again. We keep talking about it. And... again, I wouldn't be surprised, looking forward, if he does win, he skips France.
He will, French, undoubtedly.
And just focuses on Wimbledon, because he's got a great chance.
Undoubtedly.
Knowing what the injury situation at the moment with Murray, Nadal, Djokovic all carrying injuries, he may just say, I'll go for 21.
Does he go into the final as well, a fresher man? Because obviously in the semi-final that...
He does, he does.
His opponent
right,
retired
Dale.
There as well.
Absolutely. Cilic was pushed to five. Okay, Nadal ended up retiring, but that was a grueling match and would have taken a bit out of Cilic. He did have the extra day off, though. So that kind of, you know, I guess negates that point. He's had the extra day. His semi-final was on the Thursday. Federer's on the Friday, but then Federer, you're right, he was 5-2, 6-1 in the first set against Hyung Chung, was 5-2 up in the second before Chung pulled out with those blisters youngsters. So both men actually come into it relatively fresh. That should help the spectacle. And I'm with you. It was interesting listening to Roger in his interview, his post-match interview with Jim Courier, who I think does a great job, incidentally, at the Australian Open. And, you know, he was asked, could you have, if I had asked you the question 12 months ago, before you started that Australian Open, you were on 17. If I was to ask you the question 12 months later, you'd be bidding for your 20th, what you would have said? And Roger said, good joke, Jim, you know, that's what I would have said to you. He is someone that looks to me as if he's playing pressure-free. He's got 18, he's got 19 in the bank, and yes, it's a target to win 20, but there's a freedom to everything Roger's doing. He's enjoying his tennis. Even Ljubicic, you can't understate the role he's played in this new and improved Roger Federer 4.0, call it what you will, and it's going to be a belting final. I will be at the golf all day, but I make no apologies for saying that I will be watching the
golf. Chilich as well, he'll go into that game obviously after that Wimbledon defeat, and maybe a point to prove, but he will obviously want to make more of a spectacle of what happened in the final.
Absolutely, and that's I guess the big question mark. Did he learn his lessons? Has he got a point to prove, or will that still be playing on his mind, what happened at Wimbledon?
Tennis for you tomorrow, lots to look forward to, and of course the golf tomorrow as well. So how are we set? If you look outside the window, you will have seen the sun has almost completely set, which means round three has come to a conclusion, the Emirates Golf Club. Let's get the what's what from Chris McCarty.
Yes, we've got set for a barnstorming finish to this 2018 Omega Dubai Desert Classic tomorrow. We will be down there broadcasting throughout the day. What I can tell you is that it's the 22-year-old, the man from China, Haotong Li, that leads the way. An 8 under par third round 64 has moved him on to a scarcely believable 20 under. It is worth just remembering that three men in the history of this tournament have shot 22 under. That is the record for the tournament. Haotong Li is just two off of that with a full round to come. He will hold a one-shot advantage over Rory McIlroy. Huffed and puffed a little in his third round, eventually finishing 4 under for the day, moving him to 19 under. He did start as the halfway leader after an 8 under par second round. He started the day on 15 under. He's moved to 19 under, so he will go out with Haotong Li. That will be the final pairing out at around about 12:30, 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Rory McIlroy, two shots clear then of the two men that are chasing down the leaders, Hayden Porteous and Alexander Levy. They're both on 17 under par. Andy Sullivan, who's had a decent record here over the course of the past few years, he shot the round of the day a 9 under par 63 from the Englishman to move to 16 under par. That's one clear of his English compatriot, David Horsey. He was in the thick of it after the first round. He shot a 9 under par 63 himself on day one. Then come a raft of men on 14 under. Tyrrell Hatton, Thorbjørn Olsen, Rafa Cabrera-Bale amongst them as well, and Mark Archer's favourite, Brandon Grace. They're all at 14 under par. Ian Poulter at 13 under. He's joined by the veteran Miguel Angel Jimenez as well, who's had a bit of a renaissance, the 54-year-old, over the course of the past 3 days. Then comes the year Abu Dhabi winner, Tommy Fleetwood. He's joined by Martin Keimer. They're both at 12 under. You've got to think, and Henrik Stenson, incidentally, but you've got to think they are a little too far back. So all eyes will be on that leading pair tomorrow afternoon. It's Haotong Li who leads by one from the former world number one, a four-time major winner, a two-time winner of the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. His name is Rory McIlroy, and I fully expect, I'm sticking my neck on that line here, I fully expect Rory to emerge victorious come tomorrow afternoon.
I think it's fair to say that there is one name dominating social media in and around the Omega Dubai Desert Classic at the moment. That is Rory McIlroy. There is also one name that is dominating the Farmers Insurance Open over in California. Mark Archer?
Well, one name, you could argue maybe two names. Two big talking points in the PGA Tour event this week. It's the Farmers Insurance Open, Torrey Pines in San Diego. Very popular event with many of the players. And I'll beg to differ, Tom. I think there's two big talking points about this event. The one that you're referring to is, of course, the return of Tiger Woods to the PGA Tour after long absence with injury for much of 2017. The other talking point is, of course, the young Spaniard, John Ram. He has a chance to go to the world number one spot in the world number one ranking if he wins this event, and he's making a pretty good fist of it so far. Round two leaderboard, the leader is Ryan Palmer, the American, at 11 under par, rounds of 66 and 67, but one shot back is John Ram at 10 under par, rounds of 68 and 66 for John Ram. Can he do enough over the final 2 days to get to win the tournament and take on take Dustin Johnson's spot at world number one. Notable other scores: Jason Day tied for 6 at 7 under par. Retief Goosen, good to see him returning up the leaderboard, 6 under par. Phil Mickelson, 6 under par. Justin Rose, 5 under par. The man you're talking about, Tiger Woods, well, he made the cut. He's won this event 7 times previously. He made the cut on the number at 1 under par. Let's just have a listen to Tiger Woods talking about his round of golf after making the cut at his first PGA Tour event back after his long layoff.
It was a grind. I fought hard, typical, you know, just me going out there fighting for whatever I can get, and it felt good.
How much did it jumpstart your round on 10 to roll on a lengthy putt? You hadn't really seen many drop this week and then close out like you did.
It's hard to make anything drop when you're, most of my putts are from 40 feet on.
Yeah.
So it was nice to get one, you know, to fall in there and get something positive going into the back nine. And I knew I needed to get to, you know, probably 2 under par to be safe, I mean, which is crazy to think about. That there's, what, 70-plus guys within what, 8 shots of the lead. It's just crazy.
You talked about your short game and getting used to chipping off of ryegrass. We saw some nice chip shots on 5, 6, and 7. What was it like to execute those?
My short game's been good all week, so that part's been good and solid. It was just trying to get used to the firmness of the greens. You know, we can hear the ball land from the fairway, and that's normally not the case. They're awfully springy and pretty difficult.
Assuming you do see the weekend, which aspect of your game will benefit the most from having 2 more rounds in tournament conditions?
I think everything. I've been away from the game for a couple of years, yeah. So it's nice to get out there and just compete again. So hopefully I'll be around for the weekend and be able to compete and play and you know, keep building.
That's Tiger Woods after his second round at the Farmers Insurance Open over in Torrey Pines in San Diego. Lovely part of the world. Tiger Woods made the cut, 1 under par. The man, though, who has the chance to take over the number one spot in the world, the man that Thomas Bjorn, the European Ryder Cup captain, will be very happy with his form and the likes to make that team for later this year, is John Rahm. This was John Rahm, 10 under par, talking about his round at San Diego.
My short game kept me alive today, definitely. You know, it wasn't the best driving day up to what I'm used to, especially after last week. But, you know, I made a ton of good up and downs, both for birdie and to safe par. So that's what, you know, made the round instead of being 2 or 3 under, being 6 under.
You're at 10 under, just 1 off the lead at the moment. We've talked about it in the broadcast. If you win, you could become number one. You've been asked about it all week. Yeah. And you said you wanted to focus on the tournament and not what could come with that. How big a motivating factor is it to eventually reach that spot?
I mean, it's extremely motivating and it's extremely humbling to think that I have the opportunity this week. But if it doesn't happen, it won't be the end of the world. I know in the future we'll have it again. It's just golf, you know. We come on here to do a job during the week, and we're trying to win a tournament. And, you know, those are perks that come with it. But like I said, I'm trying to focus each day at a time, each run at a time, and one shot at a time. So if I start thinking too much and what could happen and what might happen, I'm sure not going to keep playing good.
You're coming off a win. You're just 1 off the lead at the moment. What's it like inside the ropes for you when you're riding a streak like this?
Oh, it's great. You know, especially out here in the city of San Diego where I get a lot of support. It's nice to walk down the fairway, and even if you're in the rough, to get support from the people around saying, hey, you got this. You can make par. You can make birdie. It's great. And, you know, like I said yesterday, it's a lot of memories every time I walk the South Course, right? Every time I see a pin that's somewhat close to what I played last year, I'm like, oh, made birdie there. You know, there's there. I did that there. So it's nice. It's a good feeling. A lot of positivity going around.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. We're up here on the rooftop garden. There's a few dejected Peterborough fans on the big screen at the moment. Why is that? Let's find out from Del Gordon.
A very professional performance by the Foxes this afternoon, Tom. They've rounded up the win at 5-1. 2 late goals as well after Peterborough did have a little bit of a spell where they grabbed a goal back to make it 3-1. But Andre, it was Gray in midfield as well who picked the ball up for the 4th goal, had a shot. The goalkeeper then made a good save. And Diabate got his 2nd goal of the game on 87 minutes. And in the last minute of added on time, Ndidi, who came on as a substitute as well, his performance was excellent as well for the 20 minutes he was on. He grabbed another goal to make it Peterborough United 1, Leicester City 5.
Getting ready for the 7 o'clock kick-off. We'll have build-up for that one with the fellas in just a few moments' time. Just want to turn our attention to all things American sport one final time this evening. I was recently over in Los Angeles, had the opportunity to go over there for the Golden Globes, and thought I might get involved in a little bit of sport. not a huge amount going on this time of the year. That said, Rams were in the playoffs. That created a bit of a sensation in and around the city, because I think traditionally, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but talking to sports fans there, you need to have success in order to bring the fans to your stadiums and to your games in a place like Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's a massive market, and you know the team that you associate the most with Los Angeles is probably the Lakers, but they have been a pretty poor franchise for a number of years. Of course, Kobe Bryant was the dominant player for them for many years, but they haven't won the NBA title for a number of years now. Kobe's long gone. They've been a struggling franchise in the NBA for a number of years. The Clippers, they're crosstown rivals, they all play in the Staples Center, the same stadium or same arena, have been the stronger team in recent years. So that's been good. The Rams are a new addition. Of course, they were previously in
St. Louis,
and they got shifted the franchise a year or two ago. So it's very much trying to build a new fan base and establish themselves there. The success they have, the baseball, they had a good season. We talked much about our friends at Emirates Airlines. The Dodgers had a great year, going to the World Series, losing that World Series 4-3. To the Houston Astros. So they've had some success in that, and that's great there. But it's a mass market. You know, you've got two teams in baseball. You've got the Angels, the Anaheim Angels, which is not far away. You've got the basketball. You've got the Clippers and the Lakers. You know, you've got a couple of football teams. San Diego's team, the Chargers have renamed themselves the LA Chargers, so they've kind of kept that LA piece there. So, yeah, it's a clustered market. And as you know, they're doing entertainment. You know, Hollywood.
Yeah, but I think that sort of bleeds into what they demand. You know, you need a couple of big names. You need, and that's what the Rams got that to a certain degree towards the end of the season. Criticism I heard from Rams fans was that stadium's too far away and it's very corporate as well. And that's the one thing that will drive your core fan away, especially in America, because if you ain't got hot dogs, if you ain't got access to refreshment areas, they ain't coming. And apparently there's a real focus on corporate down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that the stadium is so far away as well, that was my experience in LA, that it is so spread out that if it is out your way, if getting out there is difficult, then a lot of fans will turn away. And with the fact that it's a new franchise moving into LA, it's very difficult. That will take time to build up that affection with the club and affiliation, so it will take time. I think one team who's done it very well is the Galaxy, the Home Depot Stadium. It's small, they've not made it too big. It's about 25,000-30,000 in there, and you know, with the Beckham effect and all the rest of it, they've been successful as well under Bruce Arena over the past as well. So you've got to be a success. It comes back to your original point. If you're a success, you know, you do all right in LA.
Pantone 294. Does that mean anything to you fellas?
It's a colour. I don't know which colour it is though.
Nothing.
Pantone 294 was created with the hopes of uniting Dodger fans from all over the world in efforts to support the LA Dodgers in blue while they are away from home, but also at home. Where's the name come from? It stands for, many people don't know that Dodger's official blue tone colour is listed as Pantone 294. And the Dodger blue is so symbolic to the city of Los Angeles that Pantone 2914, the official supporters club of the LA Dodgers, want to show it off on the road and in and around games as well. So whilst I was over there, you know, we've heard a lot from the team. We've heard a lot from, you know, Emirates in the back in light of their sponsorship of them recently. We've had our own very Ross Christ, who's been over to the stadium and things like that. But I want to catch up with the fans whilst I was there to try and speak to them. Tried to get down to the stadium, but this was the day of the mudslides, and we couldn't get to the stadium because of the mudslides on that day. We got stuck up in Burbank. So I got put in touch with Pantone 294, who basically are the official supporters club of the LA Dodgers, who come together on a regular basis throughout the week to talk, even not just on the season, but also off-season, in the midst of the off-season at the moment. I think the season gets underway April or something like that, is that right?
Yeah, pitchers and catchers usually go back April or late March, and then the rest of the team comes for their pre-season. I think the Dodgers are based either in Phoenix or Florida. They play different leagues, Cactus League or Orange League stuff down in that. And then mid to late April season gets underway.
So Pantone 294 are very keen to do more with us here in the region, because they've fallen in love with the Middle East, they've fallen in love with Emirates. You know, it's that perfect storm, isn't it? Emirates sign a deal, within the first season they go all the way to the final game of the World Series. Okay, so there seems to be something working there at the moment. So we're going to try and do something with them in the build-up to the season as well. I went along to one of their little meetings as well, in mid-season meetings, to speak to a few of the fans as well and get their thoughts. Not so much about, well, a bit of a reflection on the year that's gone by, but also what that success has done for the city and what that success has done for the Dodgers fans themselves, who, it's fair to say, have not had it all their own way for many seasons now. So what does that taste, that sweet taste of success feel like? This is the first of a series of chats we did with some of the Pantone 294 faithful.
Yeah, 2017 was the best season. It was exciting. All the players were amazing. We won. We made it to the World Series. It was just a magical, magical season. And then it all came down to Game 7, to a single game to decide whether we were going to win our first World Championship since 1988, and we lost. So to take that amazing, amazing regular season, you play 162 games, and you have this remarkable season, and the stadium was electric, and everybody was, it was just a remarkable season for history, and it all came down to one game. And we lost. We came so close. So as Dodger fans and all my friends and I, we're heartbroken. We loved the season. We had an amazing time. We're coming back in 2018. But we were really crushed by that one loss in the deciding game.
But take yourself back to the beginning of the season, the start of the 2017 season. If someone offered you Game 7 in the World Series finals then, would you have taken it?
Of course, we're incredibly grateful to make it to the World Series. Don't forget, the Dodgers hadn't been to the World Series since 1988. The fans here in Los Angeles, we are hungry for a World Championship. We had it. This was our team. It was a remarkable, magical season. Don't get me wrong. Very, very, very grateful to make it to Game 7. I was at the World Series games. I loved it. We just came so close. So a lot of gratitude, a lot of fun, just close, but we just missed one game.
As you mentioned there, first finals in after however many years. You bleed blue, as you mentioned a little earlier on. What's changed? What's changed in the culture of the team to see you go to the finals this year?
Well, the Dodger culture is a remarkable one. You go to that stadium, and winning or losing, it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience to be a Dodger fan and to be at Dodger Stadium and to be part of it. So it isn't the culture that's changed as much. It's the team management has been able to select the right players, the ones who really mesh. It's one thing to get a bunch of great players. They put together great players who have a chemistry together, and that worked this year. And so that magic in the stands, it was magic on the field. So it's not necessarily the culture that changed. It's the fact that the right players were on the right team at the right time.
Is it a flash in the pan, or the success of the last 12 months, has that been a foundation builder, a legacy builder for the forthcoming season?
Oh no, this is the beginning. We're built. We're ready. 2018 is going to be a great year. It's really hard to repeat. It's really hard to go back to a World Series 2 years in a row. But if ever there's a team that can do it, it's this one.
Player of the season for you last season?
Oh, Clayton Kershaw, one of the most remarkable pitchers ever of a lifetime. But it's not just Clayton. So you have Clayton Kershaw is by far the most dominant pitcher of a generation, and he is a Dodger for life. But we have other people. There's Cody Bellinger, who was the Rookie of the Year. There's Justin Turner, who was a team leader and just a remarkable, remarkable player in the field and at the plate. So there's a lot of them. But without question, Clayton Kershaw is a legendary pitcher.
But in terms, just going back to that point you made about trying to balance dreams with reality and things like that. You mentioned there about the difficulty to back up the success of last season. Having said that, you think the pieces are in place to put a challenge forward again in 2018?
The beautiful part about the first day of the season is that every team in Major League Baseball on day one of the season has a chance at the World Series. So that's for sure. But we do have, as difficult as it is to repeat, to even make it to a World Series for 2 years in a row, if ever there was a team that is genuinely prepared to do so, it's the 2018 Los Angeles Dodgers.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Score in the cricket, Mark Archer. Please tell us, because it is still ongoing. India against South Africa.
Yeah, it's going to be a good finish this test match. Another wicket has fallen. Quinton de Kock is the fifth wicket to fall for South Africa in the innings. LBW Bumrah without scoring for a duck. So they've lost four wickets today. Amla for 52, AB de Villiers for 6, Faf du Plessis for 2, and the latest wicket, Quinton de Kock, dismissed without scoring for a duck. So South Africa, chasing 241 for victory against India at the Wanderers, are struggling away, 157 for 5.
Let's mark your card for all things football then. We've got Dale Gordon, Chris McCarty and Mark Archer here looking ahead to Emirates FA Cup fourth round action. Let's start with your former clubs, shall we, Dale? Because they got a couple of games coming up a little later on. West Ham United on the road to Wigan Athletic. This could be trouble for West Ham, couldn't it?
Yeah, I can see a couple of Premier League teams actually getting knocked out of this round, Tom, to be honest with you. I think that Wigan, obviously the conquerors of Bournemouth in the third round after they got an excellent result on the south coast and took them back to Wigan and beat them at home. And then obviously West Ham now going to to Wigan away. I think that'll be a really, really tricky tie for West Ham. I think that David Moyes has... The controversial David Moyes appointment is now sort of like all calmed down. He's doing an excellent job there. And no doubt, obviously, he will be looking to consolidate in the Premier League over the next couple of weeks and obviously try to bring extra, some more firepower in there as well. So I think that West Ham at Wigan is a tricky one for me. I'm going to go for Wigan. I really do feel that, you know, it'll be backs against the wall for West Ham. And also, as well, I think Brighton... for me as well, I think Tony Pulis going to Middlesbrough has taken over the reins there after Gary Monk has left, and he seems to have got them ticking quite nicely at Borough. And I think Brighton going there, Chris Hughton, another manager who's probably had done an excellent job in the Premier League with Brighton, but he will obviously want to try to make sure that they survive in the Premier League. So for me, West Ham United and also Brighton are my two casualties in the Premier League.
Let's get the thoughts of Chris McCarty on that one. Wigan Athletic at home against West Ham. I suppose which depends which West Ham turn up, doesn't it?
Exactly that. And looking at the two teams as well, Tom, that David Moyes has shuffled the deck. And looking at the West Ham team, I'm with Dale on this. That's the potential banana skin. That's the potential giant killing, if you can call it that. Let's not forget Wigan Athletic as recently as, what, 6-7 years ago under Roberto Martinez, were FA Cup winners. They're a team that, yes, OK, they've fallen on hard times recently, but they are upwardly mobile now. Paul Cook's done a wonderful job there, top of League One. They will be a championship team, barring any catastrophic kind of collapse at the back end of this season. They've got some good players in there. I'm a big fan of the number 6 in the middle of the park, Max Power. Nick Powell is an ex-Manchester United player as well. Keep an eye on him. And then Will Gregg had a wonderful song written and sung about him, but he can get the goal. So yeah, I'm with Dale. I think Wigan could cause another upset there, and I'm also, he's bang on, as Dale, Middlesbrough against Brighton, Tony Pulis in there, that will not be easy for Brighton. And looking at the starting lineups again, Chris Hughton has shuffled the pack to an extent. There are still some very good players. The likes of Dale Stevens is in there, Anthony Nocciart, Sam Baldock will lead the line. So it's a decent Brighton team. That being said, I think Middlesbrough could cause a wee upset in that one as well. So some decent games later on this evening. Newport County will take on the big hitters in Tottenham Hotspur. And then the late one, it is a Saturday night. So it's not often we talk about a Saturday night kickoff at 7:45. There is one in the Emirates FA Cup. That's Liverpool against West Brom.
It's 11:45 here.
Yeah? Yep.
Do we dare, Chris, do we dare go for a treble with Swansea away to Notts County? Notts County,
yeah,
a decent season.
A very good season as well. They're flying high in League Two, isn't it? I think it's your former, who is it? Ian Nolan, former Bolton midfielder.
Kevin Nolan.
Yeah, yes. Kevin Nolan, sorry, who's in charge of Notts County. Swansea, though, Carlos Carvajal turned a little bit of a corner. That 1-0 win over Liverpool will have given them confidence. Looking at the team he's named, very good. Wilfred Boney, Tammy Abraham in there, Alfie Molson at the back. So, yes, okay, he's rested one or two, but I think Swansea should still have enough. Interesting to see old school lineup this for Notts County. Shola Amiobi, the former Newcastle man, partnering the former Blackburn man, Jonathan Steed. But I do expect Swansea to have enough.
Huddersfield Town against Birmingham City, Hull City against Notts Forest, as we mentioned, Borough against Brighton. Millwall, you had a little spell at Millwall as well. They got Rochdale this afternoon. Fond times down at Millwall. What's a West Ham man do going to Millwall? Must have got a bit stuck there.
Well, to be fair, it was the wife. She didn't want me to get, if I'm going on loan, she wanted me to make sure I didn't go on loan too far away from West Ham. another month at Millwall under the Jimmy Nicol. Had an excellent, was doing an excellent job at Millwall. But my times remembering Millwall was when I was at Norwich and we played at the Old Den. It was a wicked place to go. It really was. But they're very, very passionate, their supporters. And again, another team that has obviously tasted FA Cup, final under Dennis Wise.
Yes.
But I'm with Chris on this one. I think that Rochdale going there will be. Millwall have too much for them, so I expect Millwall to go through.
Milton Keynes Dons, they take on Coventry City, then you've got Notts County against Swansea, as mentioned. Sheffield United are at home to Preston North End. All Premier League clash in Southampton against Watford, that one's also off at 7 o'clock, and then the others we've mentioned for you a little later on. There's also Championship action, though, for you today. Barnsley against Fulham kicks off at 7, as does Bristol City against QPR, Ipswich Town against Wolves, and the club that you played a lot of, the majority your career for Dale. They're away on the road today. Brentford. Nice place to go and play a bit of football.
Oh, I've only played at Brentford once. Griffin Park, is that right, Chris?
Correct.
Griffin Park, yes. Not the best place to go to. It's not one of what I would say one of the most modern stadiums in the country, but Norwich's record at Brentford is not great, so I would expect Brentford to get the 3 points. And Norwich have been very active in the transfer market over the last week as well. They brought in 3 loany signings as well, but they're just going to consolidate this season mid-table.
Just quickly, an update from the Bundesliga. An absolute shocker on the cards at the Allianz Arena. Bayern Munich 11 minutes into their home game against Hoffenheim. Hoffenheim managed by the new darling, if you will, of coaching in world football, let alone German football, Julian Nagelsmann. And again, he seems to just have this knack of getting one over Bayern Munich. 11 minutes on the clock. It's Bayern Munich 0, Hoffenheim 2. Sergei Gnabry, the former Arsenal man, who is actually on loan to Hoffenheim from Bayern Munich, he had a penalty after 3 minutes. He missed that, but the follow-up was scored by Mark Jute. And I can tell you, after 12 minutes, Hoffenheim have just doubled their advantage. So it's Bayern Munich 0, Hoffenheim 2. Borussia Dortmund, they lead Freiburg by a goal to nil. Shinji Kagawa, the Japanese international, on the score sheet there. Red Bull Salzburg, say Red Bull, it's not Red Bull, it's Rasenballsport Leipzig, RB Leipzig to you and I. They're 1-0 up over Hamburg. Bruma, the Portuguese man, signed from Galatasaray, I believe, in the summer. He has got the goal there. And it's Stuttgart 0, Schalke 1. Naldo, the former Werder Bremen Brazilian centre-half, he's on the score sheet for Schalke. So that brings you
any relation to Ron or not?
No, none. No,
just Naldo.
Just Naldo, yes.
We've got Valencia against Real Madrid. It's on the big screen down here at Barasti. That's your 7:15 kickoff in the Spanish La Liga.
It's a good game.
Malaga against Girona. Villarreal against Real Sociedad. What you reckon? Because I suppose the pressure that Zidane and Madrid are under. Tough place to go.
Absolutely, and if reports are to be believed today, Mauricio Pochettino is the number one choice for Florentino Perez. It comes down to PSG. It really does. I can't quite believe we're talking about Zizou under pressure. He's won back-to-back Champions League. No manager since the inception of the Champions League in 1992 has done that. He's La Liga winner last year as well, but they've had an absolute wretched campaign. 19 points behind Barcelona in La Liga. They were dumped out of the Copa del Rey midweek by Leganés, and if they do go on and lose to PSG over the two legs of their last 16 tie, Zinedine Zidane will be out of a job in the end of this season. I thought Joachim Löw, the German national team boss, is a man that's flirted with Real Madrid. I say flirted, that would be wrong. Real Madrid have flirted with him in recent years, but it does appear that Mauricio Pochettino is the number one choice. And Valencia, the job that Marcelinho, who I've been watching his career very closely for the past few years, he made his name at Racing Santander, did a wonderful job at Villarreal. He has done some magnificent things at the Mestalla with Valencia. They should finish in the top four. They'll get back in the Champions League, and it wouldn't surprise me today if Valencia were to beat Real and really ramp up the pressure on Zizou.
Didn't Pochettino come out during the week and sort of say, nah, I would never go to Barcelona, nah, I'd never go somewhere else, but hey, I'd probably take the call from Real Madrid.
Yeah, given the fact he played for Espanyol, he managed Espanyol, he often got won over in Pep Guardiola during those golden years, Pep Guardiola's little four-year stint at Barca. So Barcelona is off the table for Mauricio Pochettino. Taking over at Real is very much...
And what makes that even more interesting is the overtures to Harry Kane.
Yeah,
because if the manager goes, the player might be... And of course, the likes of Dele Alli's been in different years as well. So if the manager stays put and shows some loyalty to the club, then the top players think, maybe we'll stick around. But if the manager jumps ship, those players are probably reluctant to go as well.
It could come back and bite me on the backside. I don't see Harry Kane leaving, not certainly for the next year or two. They're moving into the new stadium. He's Tottenham through and through. The man, you're right, you've named him, Dele Alli. Mm. He's not been at his best this season. He, of course, got the two goals against Real Madrid in their group win at Wembley, a 3-1 victory on that night. He's been flirting with different agents. It's my belief that I think it's Jorge Mendes who won the day. Mino Raiola was sniffing around as well, the man that's got Henrik Mkhitaryan, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Romelu Lukaku, Paul Pogba, etc. I'm sure, I could be wrong on this, but I'm sure Jorge Mendes is the one that's won the little, kind of pageantry, call it what you will, little lineup. And if he is the man that's taking on Dele Alli's affairs, I've got no doubt. Dele Alli, he's an MK, he's a Milton Keynes boy. He's got no affiliation to Tottenham Hotspur. Real Madrid's the kind of club that would turn his head. And if Poch does go to Madrid, and it is a big if, and even if he doesn't, I could see Dele Alli at Real Madrid.
And we know that how Spurs have been so... You know, with the FA Cup, they've got this history of the FA Cup as well. And I think that Chris is absolutely right. Moving into the new stadium, and when so many pundits as well have said, look, Spurs, as good as they are, if they don't start winning trophies, then players will leave. Yeah. And it wouldn't even surprise me if the manager goes as well. So, yes, they're going to this fantastic 61,000-seater stadium, 1,000 more seats than what their arch rivals Arsenal have got. But I think another 12 months down the road, I think that there will be movement. Alli, definitely. Kane, Pochettino might be the biggest thing since Neymar.
A couple of the kickoffs to just bring your attention to. Scottish Premiership, load of games kicking off at 7 o'clock. St Johnstone at home to Partick Thistle. You've got Heart of Midlothian, they're at home to Motherwell. Hamilton against Dundee. Aberdeen are at home to Kilmarnock. And I suppose the one that will focus the most attention, Celtic at home to Hibs. Any problems there for the Hoops?
For Celtic, yes. Neil Lennon would love to get one over on them. Celtic, they were over here, weren't they, warm weather training.
Listen.
Yeah, they were. They were here a fortnight or so ago down at Awazel. Very open, public and press alike. They were very, you know, come on down, we'll pose for pictures, we'll speak to the press, Brendan Rodgers and the players. So they've went back, they won their cup game, Brechin City 4-0 last weekend, I think it was, at Parkhead. And listen, Celtic, always back Celtic. They've only lost one domestic game, for goodness sake, since Brendan Rodgers took charge the start of last season. So you've always got to back them. But with Lennon in charge, Hibs will be organised. They'll be disciplined, as they always are. Well, sometimes are. And it wouldn't surprise me. But, yes, short answer to your question, expect Celtic to win.
I just think that Neil Lennon would, Chris, yeah, of course they'd like to get the, you know, I think there was a bit of history as well in the game recently at Hibs as well when Celtic went there, but I think that Celtic had just got too much. They, as Chris absolutely mentioned there about the cup game, but they also went on the back of that and beat Partick Thistle away as well in the Glasgow derby, so too strong for me.
I need to get out more, or certainly do more research, that's for sure, because that's two now. I didn't realise that Celtic were here. I didn't realise that Stephen Hawkins were here. And I need to do more. I need to work out more. I need to find out who's in town. I do know that Leinster have been in town. Certainly some of the Leinster boys. We had Jamie Heaslip on this time last week.
Brilliant.
A couple of the other Leinster lads have been here as well. And why not as well? Finished top of their group. We were watching, he was with us whilst they were playing that game, finished top of the group, great comeback from them, and finished top of the ladder going into the knockout stages of the Cup over in Europe. We've got rugby news for you in just a few minutes' time, plus we talk Sanchez after this.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Oh, a penny for the thoughts of Alexis Sanchez. There is, after this long protracted process of one of the most talked about transfers in modern time, the eye-watering figures that have been mentioned, the coming, the going, the in-betweeners, it finally gets done, you finally get unveiled, and then you get the tap saying, You're going to Yeovil for your first ever performance, all right.
Nothing wrong with Huish Park, I'll tell you that right now, Tommy. And he performed well, didn't he?
And he went, hey, where?
Not a bad Spanish impression, that, to be fair, Tom. But yeah, good performance from Alexis Sanchez last night. He was named man of the match, had a hand in two of the goals. I think it was the Ander Herrera, the second goal, counter-attack. Jose Mourinho pointed out afterwards that, you know, a Rashford and Martial, they're inexperienced, they might have picked the wrong option, not Sanchez. He waited for the defender to commit himself, he rolled it into Herrera, bang, goal. He started on the left-hand side and 70 minutes in the tank, in the legs, and the bigger fish to fry is this Wednesday. They go to his Premier League debut at Tottenham.
It's not a baddie, is it? Now listen, you've been talking to former Manchester United man.
Yes, former Manchester United captain Nemanja Vidic, and before we hear from Nemanja, I've got to say, what a lovely guy. I mean, his reputation as a no-nonsense defender precedes him in the sense that, you know, he threw his body in the line, but articulate, proper football man, and yeah, it was very good to catch up with him. We talked Alexis Sanchez, that was where I went straight off the bat, about Sanchez, whether he thinks, this is Nemanja that is, Sanchez will be a success at Old Trafford.
I think he brings something different to the team. I think he's different players to what we have with Martial and on the left side, and obviously the on the right side same. I think he's definitely gonna improve the team, and obviously he has experience, especially in the Champions League, which I think this year we're gonna challenge. I think he's great signing.
What does he bring, Nemanja? You obviously follow football very closely. He is, a lot of people will tell you, the finished product. If you think of Jesse, if you think of Anthony, Marcus, Romelu to a certain extent, still very raw, still learning the game. What do you envisage Alexis bringing to this team?
Like I said, I think he's a different player to what we have at the moment. So he can play between the lines, score goals, so he's unpredictable, his experience, like I said, in the Champions League, he played for the big clubs before, so I think we need that. Like you said, we have some young players, so definitely I think he will help them grow as well. So I think that that he shows the over the past few years that he's he can be the leader of the team as well in terms of the way he plays. So I'm sure that he's a good signing for us.
Jose Mourinho has a history of doing well in Europe. I think back to 2003, he won the then UEFA Cup with Porto, followed that up by winning the Champions League the very next year, 2004. He's won the Europa League last season with Manchester United. You talked already about it, Nemanja. So many good teams in Europe competing in the last 16 of the Champions League. But how realistic is it, in your opinion, that Manchester United, with Alexis Sanchez, can go on and win the Champions League this season?
To be fair, before the season starts, I had a lot of questions, and maybe I spoke to you as well. I said that the Manchester United have a more chance in Champions League than in the Premier League. That was my opinion even before the season. Like you said, the record of the Jose Mourinho in European matches is incredible, and I think the way he set up the teams in the Champions League in Europe, make them very difficult to play against. So I think even before Alex Sanchez came, I think we have a chance to compete for the trophy, but with him now, even more. So I'm looking forward to see the Man United in the Champions League next matches.
And that's the thoughts there of former Manchester United captain, a man that spent 8.5 years at the club, 5 Premier League titles, 5 League Cups, a UEFA Champions League and a FIFA Club World Cup title as well.
Nails, Vidic, nails.
Just an absolute monster, so he was.
We've run out of time, but not before, though, we put a all of your minds at rest, because I know that a number of you out there will be going, hang on, we've got a couple of unanswered questions out there, and so that you can all sleep sound tonight. Let's start with Mad Dog. So we worked out that we've got a Mad Dog in the world of rugby, yes?
Mad Dog Lewis Moody.
Mad Dog Moody. But apparently there's a Mad Dog in the world of football as well.
Yes, ex-teammate of mine, that would be Martin Allen.
Why Mad Dog?
Just like your little one, just absolute loon balls. But we can't obviously, the story, you can't obviously relay them back.
Where is he
radio.
Now?
Is he back at Barnet? I think he might be.
No, he's not at Barnet.
Where was it? He's had so many managerial jobs, it's very difficult to keep track of what Martin Allen is doing. But he does bits and pieces with Sky Sports as a bit of a broadcaster. He's always there or thereabouts. But he was at Barnet. He was I'm sure he's back at Barnet. Let's find out now. He is back at... There he is, and he looks like a mad dog as well. That's Martin James Allen, according to Wikipedia. And I know I'm hoping Wikipedia can put us in the picture. He's currently in charge of... He was at Barnet up until 2016. He then had a little spell in charge of Eastleigh. He's currently out of a job.
Okay. We'll get him over it. Thank you very much indeed for that one. That was Martin Mad Dog. And the other one we asked a little earlier on, manager that was instrumental in turning George Weah into the man that he is today, the footballer that he was then, and of course the president that he is now, is...
Arsene Wenger.
Nice story, this.
Yeah, it's a great story. Took him to AS Monaco, if memory serves me, 1988. He was raw. We were talking about it off air. He took a punt, as we like to say, did Arsene Wenger, and was repaid in kind. He was fantastic for Monaco. He went on to play for PSG. I think he moved 1992, had a few years there, then went on to play for AC Milan. Won FIFA World Player of the Year. The first African, was he, to become FIFA World Player of the Year. And then he scored that incredible goal that I can still remember to this day. I was a young boy, 10 years of age. He picked it up in the penalty box, AC Milan at the San Siro. He picked it up, ran the length of the field against Verona, got a little bit lucky on the halfway line, produced a finish, bottom corner.
What do they call it? It's got a title and everything.
Does it really?
It's like the line-to-line goal.
It was awesome. A little bit like my similar debut goal for West Ham, Tom. We played at the top of the show.
Wish we could play at the end of the show as well, actually. I think that's a perfect way to play out. We'll get the Dale Gordon goal of the century to play out with in just a few moments' time. So, yeah, as you said a little earlier on, and we should think about that. We should get the rights on it because, yeah, it's a film waiting to be made, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, we were talking about the story. I mean, he is now president of Liberia. We've talked about Manny Pacquiao from the world of boxing and how he's got a political life now in the Philippines. But for George Weah to come from where he came from to play for some of the biggest teams in world football and now go back to become president of Liberia, it is incredible, and it will be coming to your screens sometime in the near future.
Chris, thanks for doing the hard yards for us today. I know that you've been pretty much on the end of a microphone for the last, 36 hours or something like that, from the marathon to the golf.
Listeners
golf
will be getting fed up,
back
Tom.
Today. But really appreciate your insight this evening. Thanks for that, mate. If people want to find out more, of course, we've got a game tomorrow in the FA Cup, haven't
we? Yes, we do. Cardiff City against Manchester City. That one coming your way from 8 o'clock. Coverage will start at 7:30. Tune in, though. Sports Tonight for half an hour. Me and Rob will just be wrapping up what went on the Mega Dubai Desert Classic.
Okay. Mate, thanks so much indeed to you, Marky Archer.
Thank you, Tom. Quick update from the Wanderers. India are on the brink of victory. South Africa has slumped to 162 for 9. They're chasing a score of 241. So India will salvage some pride out of their tour to South Africa. It looks like they're going to win the third test match in Johannesburg.
Thanks very much for doing that. Enjoy the FA Cup. And Dale Gordon, thank you to you. We started with praising you and your historic goals in the Premier League.
There weren't many. Just the one.
Was it?
Yeah, just the one. But, you know, that was the all-important first ever goal for West Ham.
Exactly.
Have you mentioned that today?
Well, we should do it again. In fact, not only should we mention it, we should play out with it as
Thank
well
you,
because it's a piece of history. Dale, it's always good to catch up with you. Enjoy the FA Cup this evening, fella, and thanks very much. That's the man that is Dale Gordon, former Norwich, former Rangers, and of course former West Ham man. And you know what? It's gone down in the history books with West Ham, because without him, well, they wouldn't have started their Premier League campaign. Listen.
One from Dix. Approaching the halfway stage of this game. This is Clive Allen, nicely played into the path of Tim Brakel. Will he have another shot? He will! Oh, goal! Couldn't hold it. Rennie's there! And it's into the net! Dale Gordon, the scorer! The very first Premier League goal for West Ham United, and Dale Gordon's first for West Ham. We're into the 45th minute now, and this is the goal that gives West Ham United the lead here.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.